back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a little bit of a weird week. We got a little red zone going on Sunday and got a chance to see how the other half lives in Pittsburgh and Cleveland and other places. But back on the beat with the Ravens in Chicago this weekend. I'm hoping to get to Chicago this weekend. I'm certainly going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to let ourselves play this week at Coco's. Been a long time since I've had a crab cake there. We're going to be with our mayor, Brandon Scott, as well as Senator Corey McCray. I think sports cartoonist Mike Rossigliano may be joining us, maybe even his beautiful wife, Terry, which harkens back to the days of Sports First and the News American and the day I met this guy. Chris Pica joins us now. He is blog and tackle and very, very busy if you follow Chris. One day he's in El Paso. The next day he's jumping around in Wisconsin and Pittsburgh and East Illinois and West Salukis. And whoo, boy, you get around, Pica. I'll tell you that. Anybody follows you and your work on ESPN football and soon to be in the Bahamas, I hope.
Yeah, very soon to be in the Bahamas. We're getting cranked up for the return of the Bahamas Bowl after a year off due to the pandemic. We'll be the first bowl game out of the blocks on Friday, December 17th at noon on ESPN. And my regular football travels, as you've mentioned, has taken me all over the place. It's nice to actually be off the grid for a no midweek game. And we'll be at Tennessee on Saturday for South Alabama Saturday night.
Well, for you with the Ravens in this journey, and, you know, you work for the Saints, you work for the Falcons. Obviously, the Falcons are struggling right now. And, you know, I see these struggling franchises like the Lions and that poor guy on the sidelines. And then they tie with the Steelers, which is like somehow worse than a loss, it feels like, right? As we sit around and watch all this. But nothing sort of deodorizes how bad the Ravens looked in Miami and how bad they looked against the Bengals and how relatively pedestrian they looked against the Vikings. And in other cases, we're not giving style points here. This isn't the AP coaches poll here to say how many you win by or how you look or how you feel. But certainly this has been the rockiest of times for the Ravens. And I think even more so when they lose a game and they look like they do on their worst day, you're wondering what their best day and what their worst day is. And as you get into the middle of the season here, and you know Ronnie Stanley's not coming back and Marcus Peters isn't coming back and Deshaun Elliott's not coming, you start to lose guys and you have these 30-plus guys as well. You really start to question, even when there's not a great team out there, is this team capable of winning a Super Bowl?
Listen, I think every season is going to have its share of injuries. You know, the Ravens have made Super Bowl runs with a lot of guys on the sidelines hurt. You worry about the guys that are healthy in the building when you're the coaching staff. You don't necessarily worry about the guys that are injured until they get back out on the field or they're cleared or if they're done for the year. You go, as they say, the next man up. And so it's survival in a season. It's, as you mentioned, it's not like college where you're trying to worry about style points. You're not worried about how much you win by. It's just finding ways to win a football game. And every year, every team throws one clunk inexplicable, inexcusable, whatever you want to call it. And the Ravens had that kind of effort, but let's give credit to the Dolphins. I think that had a great defensive game plan against Lamar in the offense. They made life very difficult for him and made the Ravens look pedestrian, quite honestly. And so the key in the NFL, as you all know, it's a copycat league. So now what the Dolphins were able to do, other teams are going to try to do to the Ravens down the stretch. And it's now how you react to that, what you do to change some of the play calls, some of the schemes, some of the protection. How do you keep that from happening again? And what do you learn from that when you've had a weekend off and a chance to maybe self-scout a little bit and see where you are as a roster and as a team as you get into the back half of the schedule, which, you know, with now is 17 games. There's a lot of important games down the stretch in the division, and it's finding ways to win. And when you look at the Pittsburgh-Detroit game, for instance, that game was awful in overtime. Nobody wanted that game. But, you know, there are going to be games like that. Detroit, you know, they gave Pittsburgh everything they possibly could get. They missed a field goal. They had some other opportunities. They didn't get it done. But that shows you that you know, on any given week, as they've always said for years, going back to Pete Rozelle, anything is possible. And that's what happened to the Ravens in Miami.
For you with the quarterback that runs into people, and, you know, every time I see Michael Vick, I think of you and the trajectory of your career and being in Atlanta. And I mean, I saw him out on the Fox set running around on Thursday night before the game. And, you know, I think about quarterbacks where that's where it's at. We're running. And we haven't had a lot of these in the history of the game because, in general, general managers haven't liked it. Owners haven't liked it. Offensive coordinators and head coaches don't like the fact that I have a quarterback taking on contact. I haven't talked to you in a couple of months about this. I've talked to other people about it. I haven't harped on it, although John sort of lost his mind when I asked after Lamar ran 21 times if that's a sustainable strategy. I don't believe it is. I don't think they believe it is either. But this is... to his point, you play to win the game, and we have to win the game today, and we have to run Lamar. You know, it goes back to Matt Wieters catching 163 games or whatever Buck had him doing. You know, there's only so much tread on tire, and when it comes to quarterbacks acting like running backs, when Dobbins went down, Gus goes down, they bring in the Le'Veon Bells, the Devonta Freeman, you know, these guys, it's fine, but there is this thing about him having the Superman getting in the phone booth in the third quarter and give me the ball and I'll do it. And all the Willis Reed from last year in Cleveland, there's only so much of that for me, even at 24 years of age with him and taking on contact and running 200-300 times a year. It does concern me long-term, and it concerns me as someone that would say he's earned his $40 million a year, give him the long-term contract and all that. We should be getting away from him taking on contact, not finding more of it. And I think that's just concerning to me as a ticket holder, as a fan, as, you know, as a guy that talks football. This, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have your quarterback taking on contact.
Well, I think let's put a couple things on the table. One, I believe, you know, Lamar is a big human at the quarterback position. And Mike Vick was that way too. Mike Vick was not a small quarterback. These are guys, and Cam Newton.
I don't think of Lamar as being big, by the way, and I would argue that.
I do in terms of just a body build, okay?
He's not Cam Newton, dude, and Cam Newton.
But he's also not Drew Brees, who's built was very slight of build.
Fair enough.
Wouldn't necessarily want him to run to do that. So.
Well, Kyler Murray's not a big guy either.
Right. And so you look at – I look at the build, and that's Lamar's game, and part of this is – you know, I what we don't know and what the coaches will never tell you is how many of those plays that he runs on every game are designed runs and how many of those are because of breakdowns of the play or the opponents smelling out what they're trying to do offensively to the wide receivers. And sometimes it's the last option. It may not be the option that the coach wants, may not be the option the offensive coordinator wants. But sometimes Lamar sees a hole open and he knows he has the speed to get to a spot to get a first down or pick up a big gain and get himself safely out of bounds. And that's his nature to do that. It's rare. Okay. Opponents and teams didn't know what to do with Michael Vick either. You know, Vick was such a special talent at the position running the football. Now, he was not the greatest passer in the world. I remember our time in Atlanta. We spent a lot of time sort of propping up his passing ability. Mike was not the greatest passer, and I think he would admit that he wasn't the greatest at studying opponent tendencies and other things, and he's admitted it much over the years. Whereas Lamar, I think, is a good passer. He throws a good ball. He gets the ball to the receivers.
Again, well, then he needs protection, and he needs a running game.
That's part of the problem.
To me, down and distance has been one of the big issues for them, is that when first down fails, they are not a good offense at all. And they're not set up to be a good – they're set up to be second and three, second and two, second and four, and eat off of that and never be in third down. When they've had success, that's been who they've been. And that's a hell of a thing to say, Chris. That's a freight train thing. Yeah, we get eight yards on first down, we'll kick your ass. Well, of course we will, right? I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Every team will tell you that. When you're able to dictate the playbook on down and distance, most often you're successful. When the opponent can dictate their playbook to you in third and long, chances are you're not going to be successful. And that's just the nature of football. So for me, is it concerning Lamar runs as much as he does? A little bit. But again, it's part of a larger issue. And the larger issue is his protection in the pocket to find his receivers. what his receivers are doing to get open. Obviously, you know, they were throwing to the tight end a bunch. I mean, Andrews is seeing the ball more than he ever has as more of a, I mean, he's more than a safety now. He does catch the ball, does get good yardage. You know, Hollywood Brown's made some great, great catches. But by and large, there, I think there have been some difficulties in the offensive plays that the Ravens have not been able to take advantage of to allow Lamar to stay back in the pocket and use his natural throwing ability. Like I said, the one thing that Michael Vick really didn't have, I think Lamar has. Lamar has touch. Lamar can throw it a long way. He can throw a good ball. Sure, he can throw a hard
ball. But I would say Lamar's taken on more contact than Michael Vick ever did because he runs more.
I think Vick took his share of contact. Okay, now he was, he was elusive. But in my days, in my year in Atlanta with him, I mean, I think he took his share of contact, but he also was smart about when he decided to run. You know,
I guess the only reason we're comparing him to Michael Vick is there's nobody else to compare him to.
Right.
There's nobody that's looking to run 12 to 18 times a game.
There's no one in the modern game of pro football in the last, you know, you can go back a long way. I mean, not, you know, we remember Frantz Harkinson scrambling around. Well, Frantz Harkinson's not in the class of these guys by any stretch, you know? So I think Vic picked the spots where he knew he could get to the outside. He knew he could avoid contact and he had big runs. Sometimes I think Lamar likes to prove a point that he's willing to go through maybe a little bit more traffic on his runs, that maybe the holes aren't as big for him when he decides he wants to go and he's willing to take that contact. And I think that's something that the coaches, you know, may discuss that with him and saying, hey, you don't need to do that in that situation. We prefer you to see a little bit more of a hole and a little bit more of an opening for you to do what you do to get yards and not get hurt, you know, but it's awful hard to take someone whose game is what he does and tell him not to do it. I think that's, you know, that those are hard discussions, you know, between coaches and players.
Well, and I think it's even harder on a day after when you have to play football in 96 hours and you run 21 times and then you can say, well, we did what we needed to do to win. And then you go to Miami and really look ill prepared to play. And, you know, you've done these turnarounds and, you know, for all the years that the Cowboys and the Lions, you know, had their Thursday turnaround every year and the advantage of doing that, every organization has to do this now and go play when they're not really ready to play. They're not set up to play. And, you know, that, to me, the Miami game, and it's not an excuse, and or as Luke would say, Buck Showalter would say that, but that'd be a convenient excuse. Well, it is, but that's what happens during a long season. You get beat, and you get beat badly. You get embarrassed, and you have to go dust off and go out to Chicago and try to do it again. I'm just concerned about the horses and the courses for this as they get into Cleveland's and Pittsburgh's and Rams and playing into the middle of January with all of this. And, you know, I think 10, 11 wins – you're in the playoffs and, you know, we figure it out from there and they're already to six. So they're ahead of the game, but they feel like an atrophying team to me a little bit, not an ascending team, a team that's just flopping along at this point, and certainly looked that way on Thursday night against a really bad Dolphins team. It was a bad look. That look and the look against the Bengals, where the bottom is for this team, we haven't seen that bottom from a John Harbaugh team much.
No, and I would honestly say my concern is more of the defensive side of the ball than the offensive side of the ball. I don't think they look very good against Cincinnati. I think they really struggled against Miami. Again, turnaround has something to do with it. But the last two games, and sometimes you need 10 days off between games, and that's what the Ravens get in this situation to get back against the Bears, you know, and get back to what they do. And sometimes they just need a little bit of rest. And maybe refiguring some of the things. The coaches sit in the office and see, hey, what do we need to do different here with the personnel to make this work? And so the 10 days between games is probably a godsend for John Harbaugh and the coaching staff to give them an opportunity to figure out what they need to do down the stretch. It's not like they're in a consecutive games where it's, you know, a Thursday and you're going back. It's, you know, 10 days is a long time and guys get to rest and recover a little bit. You know, as the coaches like to say, get your mind right. And I think that's what they're going to try to do coming out of it.
Chris Pike is here. He is blog and tackle. You can follow him out on Twitter. He's been running around doing college football. Well, what's been your favorite college football site? You're still checking off. You're still going to places you've never been before, right? I mean, with college, there's so many places you could still go, right? So I even said to my wife this weekend, I said, if the earth were flat and things were normal, and, you know, this is sort of a mini bye weekend, we probably would have been on the beach in Miami, right? But if not, hey, a little Michigan State Maryland game out there in East Lansing in the Stones in Detroit on Monday. You know, there's a lot of possibilities, but somehow you always wind up in like weird places in Illinois and stuff. It's kind of cool.
Well, it is. I've of the 131 stadiums I've currently in FBS, I've worked in 79 in one capacity or another, whether it's in television or my sports information career. Probably favorite this year, sneaky good time, El Paso, Texas. I think El Paso is a great town, and they had a great atmosphere for Saturday night. Wisconsin, Big Ten football, don't get to see a lot of that in my travels, but that's a fun atmosphere. That game was over with by the end of the first quarter, but the Wisconsin people, regardless, still have a great time before the game with an 11 a.m. local kick. And then certainly after the game when all the bars and everything is full on our way to the airport.
I spent a little bit of time in Madison, enough to know that, you know, if I ever went back, it'd be trouble. And I did walk into Camp Randall once, but it was empty. So I did take a picture.
It's an old facility, but, you know, like I said, it's Big Ten football. There's a lot of beer. There's a lot of food. There are a lot of people bundled up. It's cold.
Tell me you had a bratwurst in Madison. Just one.
I did.
Okay,
I did.
Good. All right, good. That's to make sure. All right.
I did, and it was a place across the street from the stadium called Mickey's Dairy Bar that might have had the biggest breakfast plates I've ever seen in my life. I am not kidding you when I say that. I think our play-by-play announcer, Clay Madvick, who I worked with all season, just said, just looks like they brought us a five-gallon pail of potatoes, okay? That's Big Ten football.
Well, you're having fun, man. I mean, I saw they were trying to get the College Game Day crew to Missoula and, you know, to these great places they've never been, you know, and I see the sunset at Husky Stadium and I think, man, I want to see a game there, and I've had opportunities. Dude, I'm just getting old now. I did that back when the Ravens happened at the turn of the century. I think you know this. Well, you were living in New Orleans at the time, but I didn't know you well, 96, 7, 8. You were on the back end of the Michael Jordan era, but when the Ravens came into existence, I used all of those weekends to go to Tuscaloosa, Knoxville, Ole Miss. Haven't been to Auburn, hadn't been to Mississippi State, but I've been to Gainesville. I've been to Tallahassee. I've been between the hedges in Athens. So, you know, I went to a lot of these places, and now my wife's a little bit like, we should go to Notre Dame, or we should go to Michigan, or whatever, and I'm thinking, I don't know, man. Chris looks like he's having a good time in like Northern Illinois, you know, like going to these places where it looks like it's a little less hassle, you know, the Akron Zips or whatever.
It is a little less hassle, but it's just a different atmosphere between the bands and the fans, and sort of that family tradition. A lot that you see at the Ravens games, you have sort of the same thing, but it's just a different atmosphere and the traditions are a little bit different. You know, you said you never had a chance to go to Auburn and Mississippi State. That's two of my favorite places to go in the SEC. LSU, certainly on a Saturday night, is one of the best atmospheres of college football. Texas A&M is tremendous. And some of the smaller towns that love their football. I've been to Wyoming where, you know, when their stadium is full, it's 10% of the population of the state. Okay. And it's, you know, beautiful. If you catch it early in the season when it's beautiful weather, you know, and El Paso and some of these other places, I mean, it's different. It's a different feel, but it's still a heck of a lot of fun. And for those people that haven't been able to go to college games, if you've been to Maryland or other, you know, other places that are nearby, Virginia, North Carolina, any place in the ACC, it's a lot of fun to be on those college towns on the weekends.
Chris, for you with you know, the rest of the league, we talk about Lamar and the Ravens and where we are. The league feels very ordinary, right? It feels like there's nothing special happening. I mean, even the Patriots, you know, brewing up a little something on the Browns over the weekend, but sort of upstarts. Arizona, certainly not much without their quarterback and their wide receiver, and, you know, that remains to be seen. Injuries, COVID for Ben Roethlisberger, and the Steelers take on a tie that feels like a loss. The Chiefs look like the boogeyman, maybe coming back again on Sunday night and playing the way they played. But there's nothing tying all of this together the way Tom Brady and the Patriots, or the way the Packers maybe, or the Saints of Drew Brees, these sort of great teams that some team's going to win 14 or 15 games this year. There's none of that going on. So for that, I think it makes the league a lot more interesting that Buffalo's not that good. Kansas City's not that good. Baltimore's not that good. You know, Arizona's not that good. Dallas isn't that good. Nobody's that good.
Well, it creates the perception that you have a very wide open road to get to the Super Bowl. And like we always talk about, it's who you draw in the playoffs. You know, you have to draw a team that you do something they can't stop, or they do something you can't stop. And there it comes down to matchups. I mean, there are a lot of very good teams in the NFL this year. Is there a dominant team at this point? To your point, no. The team that probably, if I'm on the AFC side, that probably scares me the most right now, and I watch them as a collegian, is Mac Jones and the Patriots. It seems like, as you mentioned, they have a little something going on there, and he's a winner. He's a gamer. He's a lot like Matt Stafford, but he's got better personnel around him than Stafford ever had in Detroit, and their team is just starting to round out. I saw them in person against the Saints about 6 weeks ago. But they're a team I would not want to see down the stretch. You know, Kansas City's always going to be dangerous. If the Ravens have everything going on defense, they're not a team necessarily you want to face, depending on what you do well defensively. So there isn't that dominant team, but you have a lot of fan bases that think, you know what, with the right combination down the stretch, we could get to LA for the Super Bowl.
Well, I hope I get to L.A. for the Super Bowl. I did book a room, Chris, so you know, I have that, and Luke and I are trying to figure out whether we're going to be masked up for 18 hours a day and whether celebrities would show up. I don't know, but I do know that, like, we're going to play football this week in Chicago. The season's going to roll on, the Browns, the Steelers. Then it's fun. It's been a fun season so far. I'll say that. It's a lot more fun than watching the Orioles lose 107 games. I mean, it has been very, very sort of rewarding from a fan standpoint after the plague and all of this, even going to games and having flights to catch and all of that. It's been a really good NFL season here. I mean, at 6-3, it's interesting, and it is sitting there. There is an opportunity. But it doesn't look easy.
No, it's not easy, and it shouldn't be with the types of teams that this league has put out and the type of, you know, great players this league has. As it comes down to, Nestor, you know this, it's injuries. It's, you know, do you get the right combination of games down the stretch? Can you get hot? Can you find a way, you know, in the playbook? What do you got left in the playbook at this point in the year the teams haven't seen? You know, that's what I'm saying. The possibilities are there for a lot of clubs, but it's going to be incredibly entertaining in the back half of the season, and I'm certainly looking forward to it.
My dude, Chris Pica, is blog and tackle, and I will not have him sing the Mount St. Joe song, but be prepared to do that if you come out and have a crab cake with me and Moeller anywhere along the 30th anniversary trail. I'll get you back from the Bahamas in one piece, and we'll get you out to the Beaumont and Catonsville for a proper chop and maybe some mac and cheese. Chris Pica can be found out of blog and tackle. Of course, Luke's going to be out in Owings Mills all week long. All of it brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast, and the tasty coffee in my cup. My Cole Roofing mug is here, but it is the Rofo coffee in there. The Maryland Lottery is presenting our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'm at Coco's this week with our mayor. We will be in Bel Air, or Abingdon, as they say, at Conrad's Crabs, one of Chris's favorite. Going to be having the Conrad's Crab Cake on Black Friday. So bring some pumpkin pie, some mincemeat pie, and a crab cake from Conrad's. That'll be Black Friday in Abingdon. And then on the 3rd of December, we come back to Baltimore County. We'll be in Cockeysville at Pappas, joined by my pal Leonard Raskin. That's his favorite crab cake. At Pappas, so we'll be there for that. And then the 30th anniversary begins at the aforementioned Beaumont in Catonsville on the 9th of December, setting up some dates at Costas, Roos Chris, and some other places as I celebrate 30 god-awful years failing miserably at doing sports radio. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, failing up. We are Baltimore Positive.